Hi, this is Donna Hudson with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Monday, August 3rd, 2026. We're beginning on page one. Scholars Set Up for Success is the headline. This article is written by Donette Beckett, Dateline Decatur. Cheryl Hines is a little bit closer to sending her son Eddie Bramlett to Greenville University in a few weeks. "I'm a little worried, but I know he'll be okay," she said. The process may have been helped a little after Eddie was chosen as a recipient of this year's Scholar Send-Off, sponsored by the Greater Decatur Black Chamber of Commerce. Local students heading off to college were rewarded for their hard work with essentials needed for a successful first year. Eddie was one of 20 college-bound kids who loaded up their vehicles with a mini fridge, microwave, television, and other items that were waiting for them at the Ink Spot on West El Dorado Street in Decatur. "I had to work hard and stay on my grades mostly," Eddie said about earning the reward. Eddie graduated in May from Eisenhower High School. He leaves for college in 3 weeks and will begin living the dorm life. Although the items are meant for her son, Hines says this helps her too. "I was worried if I could afford it," she said. "This was a blessing to me." Tammy Fuller, organizer of the event and president of the Greater Decatur Black Chamber of Commerce, said the agency hosts community fundraisers to support the scholar send-off. "College is so expensive. This is something the kids are choosing to do," she noted. "Why not support these children that are making a great decision?" Fuller pointed out, "Few education drives are geared toward college students." "We ask the community to be a community behind all these kids," she said. "Let's help these families to bridge the gap and help them reach higher in education." "The community has stepped up," Fuller said. "We definitely do not have an issue with getting the community to participate," she said. This year marks the 11th scholar send-off. In the past, only 10 students would receive items. The chamber requested double the number this year. Worried they would have difficulty funding the event, Fuller said she was surprised when they exceeded the amount. "The donations should help motivate the students during challenging times," she said. "We just wanted to support them, even when they think nobody's looking," Fuller said. "We want you to be successful." The students were encouraged to study the list of items and check off the things they might need. When they arrived Saturday at the Ink Spot located at 269 West El Dorado Street, each student was greeted with a stack of items ready to go to their new homes. Eddie was surprised by a few of the items he received. "That fridge, I thought it'd be a bit smaller," he said. For several of the parents, the scholar send-off was another reminder the kids will be leaving soon. Tasha Mackey is the first to leave for college in her family. "I'm getting a little bit teary-eyed," said her mother, Laseka Devine, "but it's a successful thing. I'm proud of her." Tasha will be attending Tennessee State University in Nashville. She chose to apply to the college because of its distance from home. "I really just wanted to go far away from Decatur," she said. "Now I'm already getting withdrawals, but I'm still going to go." "For her to go out of state, I'm happy for her," Devine said. "Go do something to make it right in the world." The amount of items the kids received impressed the parents as well as the kids. "You can't go wrong with more towels, more soap, more laundry soap, or anything," Devine said. "Fuller shops for the best deals year-round," she said. "I love a clearance rack," she added. "However, donations are always welcome any time of the year. But we are extremely grateful, and the kids are grateful," Fuller said. Alexis Camerano and Amaria Davis will be rooming together at Southern Illinois University. The duo acknowledged they are worried about being so far from home. "It's far enough," Alexis said. Both young ladies were recipients of the scholar send-off. Although they will share a microwave, each did receive a refrigerator. "We could put one to use for drinks and one for food," Amaria said. "It's nice to have more storage." Moving on to the next front page article, "Trump Pausing Attacks on Iran" is the headline. This article is from the Reuters News Service. Dateline Cairo. President Donald Trump said the U.S. will hold off on a fresh attack on Iran as long as a deal can be reached quickly to halt Iran's nuclear ambitions and reopen the Strait of Hormuz. Trump posted late Saturday on social media that Iran and other Middle Eastern countries asked for time to complete a deal that would lead to the immediate, complete, and total reopening of the vital strait and an end to Iran's nuclear threat. He did not name the countries in the post, which followed a call with Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman of Saudi Arabia, a U.S. ally. "Based on this request, I have agreed for the future benefit of the world and likewise the survival of a successful and prosperous Iran to cancel the attack, subject to being able to rapidly make a deal," Trump wrote. "Israel joins me in this commitment," he said. Trump's apparent de-escalation after days of threats of new attacks from each side was the latest twist in the war the U.S. and Israel launched 5 months ago. Attacks have spread across the Gulf to the Red Sea and even to a Mediterranean facility in Egypt. Iran has largely closed the Strait of Hormuz, a conduit for 20% of the world's oil and liquid natural gas, before the war, causing energy prices to rise and stoking broader inflation. Eli Cohen, Israel's energy minister and a member of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's security cabinet, said there was close scrutiny and intelligence coordination between Israel and the U.S. on everything happening in the region. But he added, "With or without an agreement and regardless of any external commitments, if Iran attempts to renew its nuclear program or advance its ballistic missile industries, we will be there. We will take action and we will strike." Trump and Netanyahu met Tuesday in Washington with an Israeli official, saying they explored all possible paths to curb Iran's nuclear program, including diplomacy, economic pressure, and force. Tehran denies seeking a nuclear weapon. Iran's acting defense minister, Brigadier General Majid Ibn El-Reza, said Tehran viewed recent U.S. threats as psychological and cognitive warfare, but was treating them seriously, adding that Iran would boost preparedness and deterrence rather than be caught off guard or remain passive, Press TV reported. In his call with Trump, Saudi Crown Prince stressed the necessity of prioritizing dialogue to de-escalate tensions in the Middle East, according to Saudi Arabia's state news agency. A White House official told Reuters that the two spoke but did not provide details. As an April ceasefire in the war unraveled last month, benchmark Brent crude futures jumped 24%, and analysts polled by Reuters expect prices to rise further this year. Trump has argued that his stated goal of keeping Iran from gaining nuclear weapons justifies higher fuel costs in the near term, but the economic pain has put pressure on him to find a way to end the war. Adding to the energy industry's concerns, Iran's Houthi allies in Yemen in recent days began threatening the Bab el-Mandeb, the strait at the other end of the Red Sea from the Suez Canal, another export route for Saudi crude. The United Kingdom Maritime Trade Operations said Saturday it received reports of two maritime incidents off Oman. In one, an unknown projectile struck a tanker, damaging the engine room. In the other, the master of a tanker reported seeing a large splash and an explosion close to the vessel, though no damage was reported. This next article is our final article on page one. "Aid opens to people taken off of SNAP," is the headline. This article is written by Ben Zielinski of Capital News, Illinois. A new state program took effect Saturday to provide food benefits to people who have recently become ineligible because of federal changes to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. The Families Receiving Emergency Support for Hunger, or FRESH, program kicked off August 1 after state lawmakers appropriated $70 million in the fiscal year 2027 budget to establish a state food assistance program. The initiative allows households that lost their SNAP benefits earlier this year to receive a $400 one-time payment. At a time when the cost of groceries, gas, and utilities are all rising, Donald Trump and the Republicans decided to strip food assistance from nearly 100,000 people, Governor J.B. Pritzker said in a statement. In Illinois, we passed the Fresh program to help provide some relief for families kicked off food assistance, but no state can backfill the cruel and imminent cuts set in motion by Trump's budget bill. About 150,000 Illinoisans were expected to lose food assistance benefits beginning May 1st, after new work requirements established by Congress went into effect. About 1.5 million Illinoisans received SNAP benefits in June, according to the Illinois Department of Human Services. That includes 830,342 households. The number of beneficiaries in June was down 134,734 people compared to April. Eligible households are those that lost benefits because of the federal changes and are automatically enrolled in the Fresh program. Recipients will receive the one-time payment to their Illinois Link card to use on food. People who lose SNAP coverage in the coming months will also receive payments until funding for the program runs out. Other financial impacts. The budget also included $55 million to hire 450 Department of Human Services employees, including staff to update state systems to comply with federal changes to SNAP and Medicaid eligibility. Illinois and most other states are set to be on the hook for higher costs in the coming years because of the changes Congress made. Beginning in October 2027, states will cover half of administrative costs for the program, and many states will begin covering a portion of SNAP benefits. States with an error rate greater than 10% will have to cover 15% of the cost of benefits starting in fiscal year 2029. Illinois' error rate was 14.7% in fiscal year 2025, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. That was up from 11.6% the year before. Illinois will have another year to produce a lower error rate, giving the state more time to rectify problems. As of now, the state could be on the hook for $700 million in new SNAP costs by the end of 2028 if nothing changes. Moving on to the Local and Nation page, our next article is entitled Spider-Man Brand New Day Swings to Top. This article is written by Dawn Chmielewski of Reuters. Dateline Los Angeles, Spider-Man Brand New Day brought in a blockbuster $927 million in worldwide ticket sales in its opening weekend, including $355 million in the United States and Canada, that made it the number two domestic opening of all time. The film, which marks actor Tom Holland's fourth outing as the web-slinging superhero, depicts Peter Parker fighting crime in a world that has forgotten he is Spider-Man. Zendaya co-stars as MJ, the love of Parker's life. Spider-Man Brand New Day is fundamentally a movie about friendship, about the balm of connection in all our lives, and that is resonant to audiences of all ages and all around the world, said Tom Rothman, chairman and chief executive of Sony Pictures Entertainment's Motion Picture Group. Data from RentTrack indicates Spider-Man Brand New Day had the highest domestic gross opening since the COVID-19 pandemic and the second highest release of all time, behind the 2019 release of the superhero film Avengers Endgame, which raked in an inflation-adjusted $467 million in the United States and Canada. Internationally, the film grossed $572 million in opening weekend ticket sales, with China leading international markets with $121 million in ticket sales, according to the studio. Spider-Man is one of the most popular of Marvel's comic book characters, with a cinematic appeal that endures even as audiences have shown signs of fatigue with the superhero genre. The latest installment has been well received, scoring a 90% rating from critics and 98% approval from moviegoers on Rotten Tomatoes. Paul Dergarabedian, head of marketplace trends for RentTrack, said Friday the franchise is approaching the $10 billion mark in unadjusted worldwide theatrical box office, which speaks to the character's appeal. The performance of Spider-Man Brand New Day fuels an already robust summer box office, which has been buoyed by such major releases as Toy Story 5 and The Odyssey. The overall domestic box office performance remains below pre-pandemic levels. Year-to-date receipts are up 10% from last year, but 16% below 2019, the year before the pandemic struck, according to RentTrack. Our next article is on public safety. The headline reads, Cops, man fired shots from moped, Dateline Decatur. Police are seeking a moped riding gunman who opened fire while riding through a Decatur alleyway. Sergeant Adam Seifman with the Decatur Police Department said surveillance cameras captured the gunfire around 8:49 p.m. Friday in the area of 800 West Packard Street. Some surveillance video showed the suspect enter an alley while riding a moped or minibike, Seifman said. The suspect fires approximately 10 shots in what appears to be a southern direction. He said patrol officers later found 10 spent .40-caliber shell casings in the alleyway. Seifman said officers could see no signs of bullet damage and there have been no reports of injuries connected with the gunfire. Contact Tony Reed at 217-421-7977. Follow him on Twitter at Tony J. Reed. Our next article is entitled, Farmers Turn to Solar Amid Water Restrictions. Those against solar now turn to it for revenue. This article was written by Blanca Begert and Ian James of the Los Angeles Times. California's Central Valley is one of the country's richest farming regions, blessed with fertile soil, sunny days, and a massive man-made system of irrigation canals and reservoirs. But as climate change intensifies, droughts deepen, and water restrictions kick in, growers in much of the valley are getting less water for their fields. They also face new limits on how much they can pump from underground, forcing them to leave hundreds of thousands of acres dry in the coming years. Some are turning to an answer they never thought they would embrace, solar. We still want to farm, but taking the chance that water will be here was too risky, said Todd Tracy, a fifth-generation farmer, as he drove through his groves of green pistachio trees about a half hour west of Bakersfield. In 2021, he optioned about a third of his family's 8,600 acres to solar developer Avantis. The company is planning the largest solar plus storage project in the country called Buttonbush. Its panels will eventually cover almost 12,000 acres and link up to a substation near the tiny town of Buttonwillow before sending 2 gigawatts of electricity, enough to power 1 million homes across the state. We weren't all for this, but we had to find a use for this ground, Tracy said, of his family's discussions when they were first approached by the developer. The farm grows cotton, corn, wheat, carrots, potatoes, pistachios, and almonds. But stretching between the planted fields lie wide swaths of dusty brown soil, fields fallowed over the years for lack of water. We're still paying mortgages, we're still paying taxes and employees, and we see the writing on the wall, Tracy said. What the writing says is dire. Roughly half the farm receives water from Northern California via a vast system of aqueducts. The amount has been shrinking for 2 decades, and this year growers got 45% of what they are allotted. The rest of the fields rely on water pumped from underground, and that's also getting squeezed as California's Sustainable Groundwater Management Act kicks in. Tracy said growers in his area could see 30% cuts by 2040. The law was adopted in 2014 to address acute overpumping causing dry wells and sinking ground. Pumping limits ratchet down each year until 2040 in many areas, and farmers now face fines if they exceed them. I want to be optimistic, but being realistic, there's not going to be water there in 2040, Tracy said, pointing to a 600-acre field of very good soil, left bare since he ripped out almonds at the end of their 25-year productive cycle 2 years ago. He said he may need to lay off 5 or 6 seasonal workers once all the land in the solar project moves out of production. Kern County approved Buttonbush Solar in March. It includes land from about 18 farmers in the semi-tropic water district and neighboring Rosedale Rio Bravo water storage district. Buttonbush is one of dozens of large 100-plus megawatt solar fields cropping up across water-stressed regions of the state, especially the San Joaquin Valley. researchers at the Public Policy Institute of California, or PPIC, estimate as much as 20% of the valley's irrigated land may go dry by 2040. Growers are feeling pinched, said Caitlin Peterson, associate director of the PPIC Water Policy Center. Solar is one of the potential options for folks that are having to take land out of production that has the potential to be fairly lucrative. Farmers' desperation coincides with California's solar dreams. The state is legally mandated to reach 100% clean electricity by 2045. That will require an additional 10 gigawatts of clean energy a year and between 0.5 and 1.3 million acres of in-state solar development, the California Energy Commission says. Solar on retired farmland in the Central Valley could go a long way toward meeting that goal. Some of the largest arrays are planned for places that have historically been bastions of anti-solar sentiment. Just 3 years ago, several board members of the West Linz Water District expressed concerns about solar. "I thought we were a farming board," one said when the prospect of converting more land came up. Since then, the West Linz Solar Park, which launched in 2016 as a small pilot, has continued to expand toward a 2.27 gigawatt target in Kings and Fresno counties. The 1.15 gigawatt Darden Clean Energy Project broke ground this year in Fresno, also in West Linz. In December, the West Linz Board approved converting 135,000 acres, about a fifth of all the land in the irrigation district, into a giant network of solar farms. More than half that land is owned by the district but is unsuitable for farming. The ground is loaded with crop-harming salts or in some areas prone to sinking if pumping resumes. Individual growers will also put land into the project. A decade ago, converting farmland to solar farms was something nobody wanted to talk about, said Allison Febo, West Linz general manager. But now I kind of call it our survival plan into the future. Advocates say retired farmlands are some of the best places for solar because permitting is faster than on ecologically sensitive desert areas. Unlike farmland converted to housing, solar installations could more easily revert back to farming at the end of the project's 30-year lifespan. And according to a recent report from the Solar Energy Industries Association, there's more than enough fallowed farmland in California to meet the solar need. But not all farmers want solar. A 1965 law, the Williamson Act, was designed to preserve farmland from suburban sprawl by giving tax breaks to growers if they agree to keep their land in farming. There's a hefty fee for breaking a contract, which the solar industry has been trying to get rid of for years, most recently with a proposed bill from Assemblymember Buffy Wicks, Democrat of Oakland. Some farming groups consistently fight the effort. Water availability in California changes all the time, and the response has never been to give people a free pass out of a contract they signed, said Peter Ansel, director of policy at the California Farm Bureau. He said the organization would want to see any changes to existing law tailored narrowly to only the most water-stressed areas and not allow full cancellation with no fees. Yet, in a sign of the changing times, the Kern County Farm Bureau broke last year with the State Farm Bureau to support Wicks's bill after hearing from members who wanted solar. Kern would prefer to have water and to have farmland being farmland, said Todd Snyder, president of the Kern County Farm Bureau. If that's not an option, we advocate for property right holders to do what they want with their property. West Linz Water District is pushing the state grid operator to prioritize more transmission lines in the Central Valley, Febo said. If that happens, construction of one of the world's biggest solar complexes could start within 5 years. Okay, and now we'll move on to page A4 with the Decatur four-day forecast. Today, partly sunny and pleasant. Wind northeast 4 to 8 miles per hour, high of 82. Tonight, clear. Wind east-southeast 4 to 8 miles per hour, low of 61. Tuesday, plenty of sun. Wind southeast 4 to 8 miles per hour, high of 85, low of 64. Wednesday, partly sunny. Wind south 6 to 12 miles per hour, high of 85, low of 69. And Thursday, a stray thunderstorm, humid, wind south-southeast, 6 to 12 miles per hour, high of 82, low of 70. Today's air quality is moderate. Our next article from this page is entitled Cyclospora Boosts Fears of More Foodborne Outbreaks by Kate Wells and Stephanie Armour of KFF Health News. The next foodborne illness outbreak could be much worse. That's the concern of food safety leaders across the U.S. who are raising alarms about federal cuts they say have made it harder to detect and stop the spread of foodborne illnesses, such as the recent outbreaks of Cyclospora, which has sickened thousands in dozens of states. And they're especially worried the next pathogen will be much more deadly. Food safety in the U.S. is monitored by a piecemeal system of state and federal agencies. That network is in charge of detecting, investigating, and stopping outbreaks of foodborne illnesses. Key to the system is the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's FoodNet program, created after four children died from E. coli in hamburgers in the early 1990s. States participating in the program, officially called the Foodborne Diseases Active Surveillance Network, contact labs to get case data that can signal when a problem is emerging. But in President Donald Trump's second term, his administration slashed billions of dollars in federal public health funding and fired thousands of workers at federal health agencies. It also curtailed FoodNet, stopping the program's mandatory tracking of Cyclospora and five other pathogens that together kill hundreds of people in the U.S. each year. You're basically allowing for outbreaks to continue without being figured out. Invariably, more people will get sick, said Bill Marler, a Seattle area food safety lawyer and advocate who filed lawsuits against Taco Bell on behalf of people who alleged they were sickened by Cyclospora after eating there. Under the changes to the FoodNet surveillance system, the 10 participating states, meant to represent a cross-section of the broader population, no longer have to report cases of listeria, for example. That bacteria kills as many as 30% of people who are diagnosed with it. Complications from listeria infections can include convulsions, miscarriage, and sepsis that damages organs. It's much more rare than the type of E. coli bacteria still required to be tracked by FoodNet, but almost 95% of people infected with listeria wind up hospitalized. Listeria infections result in an estimated 170 to 260 deaths each year, according to numbers from the CDC and the Food and Drug Administration. It's very hard to identify listeria outbreaks, said Neil Fortin, the director of the Institute of Food Laws and Regulations at Michigan State University. Seeing it cut from FoodNet's mandatory surveillance really does disturb me, he said. 33 people died and a pregnant woman had a miscarriage in 2011 after consuming cantaloupe contaminated with listeria. The FDA identified the cause in less than 2 weeks. States participating in FoodNet also no longer have to report illnesses caused by Campylobacter, a bacteria often contracted from raw and undercooked poultry that afflicts an estimated 1.5 million people each year. The bacteria sickened about 60 people in Idaho this year in an outbreak linked to raw milk, a product Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has championed, even though pasteurization kills harmful bacteria. And our next article is entitled Smallpox DNA Recovered from Mummies by Will Dunham of Reuters, Dateline Washington. When Spanish conquistadors arrived in the New World about five centuries ago, they brought muskets, cannons, armor, horses, and attack dogs as they set about colonizing the Americas. However, the biggest blow they delivered came from something else entirely, smallpox and other infectious diseases that ravaged indigenous populations. Researchers obtained the first direct molecular evidence of the smallpox unwittingly carried from the Old World to the New World that wiped out untold millions of people in Mesoamerica and South America. They recovered ancient viral DNA from the mummies of two people who died in an Inca community in northern Chile during the early Spanish colonial period. Smallpox is caused by a pathogen called the variola virus. An analysis of the genomes of the variola viruses present in the bodies of these two people showed they belonged to a now extinct lineage of the pathogen situated evolutionarily between strains known from medieval Europe and those circulated in later centuries. Europeans arrived in the Americas in 1492. The indigenous people had no previous exposure to smallpox and therefore no natural immunity. The virus was transmitted person-to-person contact, triggering a cataclysmic population collapse. We'll take a short break now and return soon with the second half of the Decatur newspaper from August 3rd.